children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rahama Bistritsky Clapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rahama Bistritsky Clapman here on Deb Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rahama and Family Matters.
Welcome back to MASS Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, has a helpline for parents, community, askanim, schools, teachers, rebbes, family members to call when facing issues with all mental health, whether it's addictions, whether it's drugs and alcohol, whether it's gambling, internet addiction, whether it's any mental health issue. You can call from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., 718-758-0400. Our helpline is confidential. Write the number down, maybe for yourself, maybe for a loved one, someone you're sitting next to in shul, a neighbor. Call 718-758-0400. And if somebody would like to get trained and a free naloxone kit for prevention of opiate overdose, call MASS. We will let you know where you can get your free training and your free kit. It takes only a few minutes and you can save someone's life. So if you know somebody struggling with opiates, addiction, you can save their life if they overdose, chas v'shalom. You can possibly save their lives by calling for a naloxone kit. Tonight, I'm very, very happy to have with us Rivka Weber, psychotherapist for the last 20 years, who has an LCSW. Thank you, Rivka, for coming on tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Rivka, you've been practicing for the last 20 years. You've been in the field, and MASS has been working with you for that amount of time. We hit our 20th year in February. Over 45,000 families have reached out to MASS over the 20 years. And you have worked with many families on different issues. I was wondering if you can share with my listeners what kinds of families you have been working with most recently. What are the kinds of issues they're coming to you mostly with these days?
Okay, good. Glad to share with you, Rahama. So you actually asked two types of questions. What kind of families? And I imagine that you're looking for whether this is a group particularly, whether it may be Hasidic people versus from versus modern Orthodox versus Jews who are really good Jews but irreligious, not yet affiliated. That's the first question you asked, and I'd like to respond to that. And then the second question that you asked was, what are the typical type of problems? So So with regard to the first question, yes, I do predominantly treat the Hasidic population, but not to exclude any others. I do have currently a smaller population of people who are not yet affiliated with Orthodox Judaism or modern Orthodox. The second question is, what are the type of problems? And it's very interesting to note that there have been socio-cultural structural changes. What I mean with that is that for the past 10 years, the mental health community has made a strong impact on the Hasidic community. The Rabbanim are insisting and helping and encouraging people to go to licensed therapists. That's a change. Women have entered the workforce. Women are feeling empowered. Women have more choices. I do believe that the divorce rate because of that has gone up, giving rise to more stress and more children in distress, but people are taking more choices. People want more out of life. Women in this community are getting better educated and feel more empowered, and that sometimes makes a problem in certain family systems. So that I wanted to say is the cultural piece. The other piece is the problems are typically the same of the general human population. Everybody needs to feel safe, wants love, wants to go forward. These are healthy needs. What are the problems? I'm seeing the big three, just like in the large, wide, secular world, anxiety, depression, and addictive disorders. Same.
Okay, so anxiety has come up more the last 2 years on the NASC helpline than it's been in all the 20 years that I'm working with NASC. So I don't know, is it the outside world in general, pressures, stress? What's your take on that?
Great question. It's always a question of whether people were anxious before, and we weren't open to it. We didn't recognize the signs and symptoms. There was less reporting, less accurate reporting, or whether we are more anxious because of modern day living, and it's probably a mix. There's more public information dissemination. There's more reporting. There's more awareness. People are very worried. Will my child do well? There are many children who are falling to the wayside. Do we have a particular gene that will preempt anxiety more in certain populations? That is Dr. Steve's work. He's done over 30 professional publications. They have identified a female mother-daughter Eastern European Ashkenazic gene that seems to have a proclivity towards anxiety disorders. Unfortunately, it has been scientifically proven that in the Frum Ultra, I don't like the word ultra, by the way, the Frum Orthodox population, regardless whether it's Lakewood or Williamsburg Hasidish, there seems to be a rise of obsessive compulsive disorder with the 6 subsets.
Yes, we get a lot of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder on our helpline. We have wonderful clinicians that can help both with anxiety and OCD. Do you want to discuss the modalities that you practice in your practice, please?
Sure. So the gold standard or the modality of choice that you will find online or anywhere would be cognitive behavioral responses or exposure prevention response, EPR. Now, of course, we do that, and of course, every decent clinician will start with a very thorough biopsychosocial model assessment. In other words, she would look at the biological / genetic factors. She would look at the sociological factors. Where is the person coming from? What past trauma there was. I am particularly treating a huge population who are third and fourth generation of Holocaust survivors, and it has been proven, Yael Daniele's work, of the transmission of trauma. The other thing is, so we start always doing a very thorough assessment. Now the modality, the intervention. I, for one, actually veer a little bit from the strict cognitive behavioral model, and there are many reasons for it, and I go more for the insight-oriented relational type of intervention.
Okay. Generally speaking, how long are your sessions?
They're like everyone else's, but actually no, a little longer. They're 50 to 55 minutes, and the reason why I give more time than other people is because the type of intervention lends itself to needing more time in the room. I also believe that people come very anxious. It takes them 10 to 15 minutes to chill, to relax, to get their bearings. And, you know, for 10 to 15 minutes when the clock is ticking and you're giving those expensive therapy dollars, you're really paying for a very expensive pair of ears. People are upset. So I'll give more time.
Fantastic. I agree with you that a 40, 45-minute session,
it's not enough.
Warming up those first 10 minutes, and then you only have almost a half hour left to go, that a lot of my clients do have an issue with that. So 50, 55 minutes really makes a difference.
And the initial, by the way, the biopsychosocial model that I use, I have a very big intake package, is minimum 60 to 70 minutes. Don't ask me why. I cannot do it before, and people like that too.
Very thorough. Rivka Weber is always very thorough, very open to wherever the client is. She'll meet them, whatever they are up to in her practice.
Wow, Ruchama, thanks for your endorsement. It's very meaningful.
Yes, yes, indeed. I've watched lots of different people go through your doors, and I know firsthand that there are tremendous, there's courage that is brought into people's lives. There's movement. The people that you see, the clients, they get a lot from going to you as a therapist, because they get more than other therapists that I know, because you're also available to them if needed. You'll work with school. You'll work with the rabbi. You'll work with the family. Of course, everything is confidential, and you wouldn't work with any of the outside people that are connected to your client without the client signing the release.
Ruchama, you get it. You get it. You're getting the sociocultural piece. Exactly.
Yes. So
we are not people in a vacuum.
Let's talk about the confidentiality piece.
The confidentiality, okay. There is a reason why it's a law, and it's a very firm law. I do have to put out there, if anybody feels in any way we're inappropriate, that confidentiality was compromised or severely violated, there is a number to report. I tell my people that right away. Now, what's the confidentiality piece? It can get tricky when the referral source is from a principal, a mother of a minor or a child, and that has a different law in the clauses, or a Rav or a Rebbetzin. And what I usually do is I will listen to their presentation and conceptualization of the problem, or would they like me to help, what do they think they want to do. After that, I will thank them very respectfully, and I said, that's great. You could tell me, and you've helped me. I would like you to understand, in order for this therapeutic alliance to be firm, to be strong, from now on, we will be very, very careful about what I can and cannot share. For the most part, I will not share. Are you okay with that? And I will explain. Most people coming to me are coming to me because there's been a serious betrayal or breach of trust in their life. They are traumatized, they're suspicious, they're distrustful, they're hurt people. Nobody comes to therapy because they don't have what to do with their time and money. People are propelled to the therapeutic room, which is frightening, because they are propelled by pain. My job is to create an emotionally corrective experience and environment. One of the ways to do it is to show them that what's said between us is airtight, and you have the right and the permission to have all your thoughts and feelings without judgment. If I go and share with other people what they said or did, it will destroy them. I was another person that pretended to help them and didn't.
For sure. That's a very important idea that we have to get used to as parents, as a community, that the person seeing a clinician, they must have total confidentiality. So with parents, when they call the helpline, they go to the Mass Support group, sometimes they'll say, I don't understand. I call the therapist, my daughter is seeing, and she doesn't want to share. I need to know what's going on in therapy session. And we need to explain to the parents that when their child is underage, under their 18 years old. Or
actually, Ruhama, it's actually 16 already.
I was just going to say 16 years old now, right? Then the therapist will only share if the girl is hurting herself, suicide issue possibly. Then you're allowed to notify a family member. But otherwise, you have nothing that you can share without the client's permission, the young adult.
Excellent.
And if there's somebody over 16 years old, it's even more difficult. So now the parent is frustrated. They're paying for the therapy, and their daughter is seeing you or any therapist out there, and they can't get any information. So what is it you want to say to parents to understand the alliance and the lack of
fabulous question. So what I do is, if it is a minor under the age of 16, I will do an initial parental intake. I demand, even though most men are not available, I will make myself available if there is a two-parent family to meet both mom and dad, see how they interact, get a sense of the family system, what are the nuances, the rules, how do they spend the good times, the ups and the downs, is there any conflict between the couple dyad, etc., etc., what birth order is the child. And we spend a lot of time, and I'm very respectful about the parental, which is child history-based intake. They are informing me right away that the parents feel we have aligned. If it's an older child, over 18, I will explain that, but I do have to give a caveat. What the secular world sees as a 16-year-old child developmentally looks different in a typical closed from society. Because our 16-year-olds are not chronologically 16. They may be seen from a secular sociological perspective as probably 12 or 13. The way we protect them, the way we take care of them, our children live at home until they get married, we marry them off. Their many girls are not working. And I do believe, in all fairness, we have to take in the ethnocentricity and sociological perspective here. And I will tell them, maybe we could bend the rule, because even though 16 is a marker, your child, for all practical purposes, is not like a 16-year-old from the larger world.
You know, I have another question, Rivka.
Yes.
There are families reaching out more and more for dating issues. Young girls today, you know, they don't need a dating coach. They actually are fearful of dating, and young boys, and big responsibilities. You're getting married, you have to support the family. There are different things that come up. And the girls are having issues where they're asking for guidance, not only from the parents, they're not sure what they really want, what they really need in life. So can you talk about your experiences and what you have to offer to these young women?
Ruhama, I am so glad you're bringing this up. In the past, I've been helping the typical modern Orthodox girls with their dating problems. I'm actually getting Hasidic girls who are not trusting their parents with a typical traditional 2-3 meetings bishos, a prearranged matchmaking process. So I'm so happy you brought this up. I actually have quite a bit to say about it. For the starters, we have to distinguish between universal uncertainty and personal uncertainty. Dating, the process is fraught with fear of change, problems with decision making, fear of the future, because what we're asking people to commit to actually commit in a marital relationship is a prospective type of thinking. Will I be happy? Nobody knows the future. It's a gamble. So universally, to be fair, this is a difficult thing, right? Then we have the internal piece that makes it very culturally specific to different groups of people. Now, generally speaking, there are problems with love. There are problems with decision making. There are problems with expectations, with borders, appropriateness. And we look at fear, and what is fear all about? Because fear is primarily a protective emotion. Fear is designed to protect us from harm or from loss of something of value. People are afraid to commit. And once we pause and analyze and dissect every interaction, it comes out to who is the person underneath and what are they really frightened of. But dating is fascinating. In terms of the Hasidic population, it ends up being a relational issue between the parents, the Rav, let's say, or the Rebbe, not wanting to be part of this group that the father is, and the whole piece there. And there it becomes a very relational family systems question.
Wow, so much goes into this, and people don't realize that more and more with the shidduch crisis that people are speaking about, that more and more we're recommending that girls 12th grade graduating, they're going to seminary, they come back from Israel, we're recommending for prevention that they see a professional if they're resistant to date and there's some conflict between parent and daughter or son, that it is advised that they should speak to a professional just 2 or 3 sessions.
Boy, oh boy, are you progressive. Pardon the pun. Boy, oh boy. Women talking.
You know what, Rivka? We only make statements based on our calls. And the volume is so large on this topic of dating and anxiety that both equal men and women, girls and boys, and the requests about it, that I feel the need to bring it up. And I knew that I can count on you to explain what it is that these girls and boys, these young adults, are going through. Rivka, can we just touch on the school part? I know you're involved in helping a lot of the yeshivas with different issues with young ladies in the schools, elementary and high school. Mm-hmm. So how are those relationships? We have with us tonight Rivka Weber, LCSW. Anybody interested in reaching Rivka Weber, feel free to call MASC 718-758-0400. Rivka, can you talk about the schools?
So, as I was saying before, schools are also very much changing how they perceive their job, their definition, and the parameters of the work. Once upon a time, a school was narrowly defined as an educational system, and their job was to impart information and make sure there was basically good classroom management and discipline. Not so anymore. Today, principals have become heavily involved in understanding and looking more at the child developmental piece. Like, a kid isn't bad because they choose to be bad. Everybody is driven to be successful. Why is this child not successful? That's a beautiful, progressive departure from pre-models that we had in Eastern Europe or even 20 years ago. The other thing is many children are coming to school unhappy, traumatized, and worried. There may be a sick family member. There may be an impending divorce. There may be even something as happy as a sibling getting married and leaving the family system, but the child is impacted by that negatively. Mothers are taking in elderly parents and taking care of the elderly, so their attention is being taken away. There is death, divorce, trauma, and clearly neglect. Now, I'm not going to bash working women, but women today are juggling a lot. Many of them are typically taking care of the older ones, of elderly people, trying to bring in more panasa and raise a family. The principals are stepping in a lot. That's my perspective. My
experience. Things have changed from when I began, when I started math 20 years ago and 10 years ago when they wouldn't let therapists in. Baruch Hashem, thank goodness, all the yeshivas were asking for programs. And Rivka, you're one of the sought-after therapists in the community.
Thank you.
From yeshivas are asking for therapists. You're one of those people that they request. So I want to thank you for being on with us. Time flies when we talk, usually, Rivka.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on with us tonight. I hope to have you on again. And I want to just remind everyone that if you know somebody that could use masks, helpline, confidential, 718-758-0400. Please call.
And I would like to finish. Right. Thank you, Ruhama. That it's an honor and pleasure to work with you, with your organization, and you've done fantastic work, and you continue to do, which has really made a deep impact on the community.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rivka. And I want to thank our listeners. Have a good evening, and have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thanks, Amelia. You too. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers, the Line Saving Kids, they're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters, and if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman here on Zev Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
This is Rabbi Yehuda Levin. Join me every Thursday evening, 11 p.m. to midnight, sandwiched in between non-Jewish programming, as the Fear Kashas returns to the radio on 620 SNR. Please spread the word.
KCN, Talkline Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.